This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 366, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18-1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 366. My name is Ron Richards, not Josh Flanagan, but Josh is right here next to me.
I'm not virtually, I guess.
Well, virtually. You're always virtually.
And in his heart.
Yes.
And yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
And that's Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi. I'm not near anyone.
No. We are
off
not.
To the side.
Yeah, we are not together. Although we are all back on the East Coast, which is always fun to celebrate the holidays.
Time zone.
Yes. Same time zone. You'd think it would make things easier. I think it would. Not so much. Anyway, we are from the website.
I don't get my alone time.
We are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to the wonderful world of comic books. And every week, we read a whole stack of comics that come out on Wednesday, and then one of us picks the pick of the week and writes a review about it on ifanboy, and then we come here to talk about it, as well as all the other books that came out and some other whatever else we feel like talking about, because it's our show. Before we get into the show, we're going to talk about what happened in the books. So if you haven't read your books, they might get spoiled, so be warned. We don't want to be accused of ruining anybody's enjoyment of their comic books. I just won't take responsibility for it. You've been warned. This is the last pick of the week show of 2012 and the last pick of the week of 2012, and Connor had the honor. And so, Connor, why don't you take it away?
Wednesday was an expensive day at the store, like I'll tell you. And it was one of those weeks where it's the end of the quarter, end of the year. Marvel dumped all their books. I think there was like 10 Marvel Now books out this week. It felt like there were. And the thing was, on the one hand, lots of great books. I really enjoyed this week of books. There was a lot of them, but there was a lot of good stuff to read.
I had over 30 books. I had like 32 books to go through. It was awful.
Yeah. On the other hand, it's a lot of reading to do. But at the end of the day, there was honestly only one clear choice. And in a week where you've got Avengers and All-New X-Men and Thor and Daredevil and Happy and Saga and books like and Wonder Woman, books like that, Hawkeye number 6 blew them all out of the water. It wasn't even close, to be honest with you. When I finished my stack, there wasn't even a consideration. It was just jump right into writing the review. Hawkeye number 6 from Matt Fraction, David Aja.
Was saying Aja. He specifically asked him on Twitter, and he was like, "I don't care." That's not an answer.
That's not an answer. They are really turning in what is the surprise book of the year for me, anyway. This was not a book. I mean, I love David Aja's art. He's great. He's one of my favorite artists. He did a great work on the Iron Fist and that Wolverine Dead of Death book. But I would not expect to love the complete package as his Hawkeye as much as I have. And was fascinating to me. And the story was great. It's another one and done tale of Christmas in the sort of wacky little community that they've built around Clint Barton, including Kate Bishop and his neighbors in the building he owns, and Tony Stark stops by, and there's a bit of an incident with the villains of the book. But what's amazing to me is that it sort of breaks all the normal conventions of comics, or at least among the conventions that are happening now in superhero comics. I mean, the very first page is 21 panels on it.
It looks like a Chris Ware book.
And
that's what I kept thinking the whole time. I was like, this is a Chris Ware book.
And the average number of panels is so huge, and you don't feel it.
And it's very Mazzucchelli-esque, and I thought that was a great observation on your part, which was that, you know, yeah, it is breaking rules left and right, and is that one of the reasons why it's so magical?
I don't know, but I like that it does, and I like the fact that even though there are 21 panels on the page, it doesn't feel overwhelming, or it doesn't feel claustrophobic, it doesn't feel wordy, it doesn't do all the things you expect to do when you have too many panels on a page. It's a very light and breezy book. In fact, light and breezy would be the tone I would describe it. But it does those crazy things. It features a superhero who doesn't wear his costume. He wore it on two pages in this issue. Granted, it was over 10 panels, but it was still only two pages of the whole book, and it's probably been less than 20 panels total throughout the entire six issues that he's worn his costume. And it plays with design from the cover to the inside to everything. Everything about it is clearly thought out design. He plays with the dialogue. He doesn't really write it all out.
Did you notice that the pages that he is in the costume, the superhero quote unquote pages, they look like a scrolling platform game?
Someone didn't read my pick of the week review.
You know why? Because I just got to the book. Do you know how many there were?
Yes, yeah. I read them all on Wednesday.
I know.
Absolutely. I read that in my review. In that sequence, it's a side scroller. Side scroller. It does all kinds of fun experimental things, and they're all working. For whatever magical alchemy they've tapped into with this creative team. And it goes to Matt Hollingsworth as well on colors, because there's a purple hue to the entire book, which you think would be annoying, but it actually isn't. I think it's because everything's kind of muted.
Yeah, he keeps it subtle enough that it's not annoying.
And Chris Eliopoulos is on the letters, too. Everything about the way this book looks is intentional. And you can say this about every book, but they actually pull off something really interesting design-wise, you know, from the way that the AV setup sort of frames the opening scene when Tony and Hawkeye are trying to set up his TV. And it's just everything. I love the way this book looks. I love the way it reads. I love Hawkeye. I love Clint Barton's character. I just love everything about it.
The Tony setting up the TV page, I just love purely for to have the schematic on the side of it. Like it's factoring. It's like you said. I mean, it's like a Chris Ware book or an independent book. It's and much like Nowhere Men, which number two came out this week as well. It's factoring design into the comic and becoming that much more than just a series of panels and action and that sort of thing. And it's becoming way more immersive. This was delightful. This might be my favorite issue of the run so far.
I think it is my show.
Yeah. Again, I'd like them to put "This was delightful" on the cover.
Well, why not? It was true. Well,
it's interesting is that didn't they talk about how they wanted to sort of reinvent the design and look of comics with Marvel now? And we haven't really seen that other than this book.
Yeah.
But this is really the only one that's really doing anything interesting with the way the books look.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't want any more books to look like this. You know, I want this book to look like this. You want each one to look like its own thing. But when they sort of said what they were going to do, I don't think I ever expected to see something as extreme, I guess, is this. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. Just like really pushing the boundaries of what people find acceptable or what is, you know, what the definition of a superhero book is.
Yep.
You don't want them all to be like this, but it's really neat that this one exists.
It was funny though, because the only one negative that I can take away from it, and which not as much to this one as it is with the other ones, but this was like Tony Stark cameo week, and it drove me fucking crazy.
Yeah,
and you know, like, and so, but like in this one, it made sense because at least they referred to it, like the setting up the TV, and he needed Tony's help. Like that was a callback to a previous episode, which was good. And then it added the joke with what a dog police or whatever, you know, whatever the show that everyone was talking about was, and you know, like it enhanced it. But we'll get to the other books later on. The other books just drove me crazy with it. But it was delightful. That's all I can say about it. It was wonderful. So I mean, I read it twice. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah.
talking about Pate.
No, it really, and the thing is, I'm not a huge Matt Fraction fan. I've only read a couple things of his I liked, but I think he's really tuned into this whole character and world he's built. And it seems to be that attitude he has in the past that I have not found to my liking fits this character.
Right.
And therefore, it's okay.
Right.
You know, I haven't liked the sort of everything is kind of hip and funny in every book he writes, but in this one it works.
Yep.
And in this one, I think that's what's great about it.
Yeah.
I love it. I hope this book stays around forever.
I mean, and the funny thing was is that also, and we're going to find out, like, so the next issue is the Hurricane one, right, with Steve Lieber and some other guy in art. The thing is that, I mean, the only thing negative to it is that AHA can't do every issue. And
yes, and it does lose a step when he doesn't draw. But that's the important part of the design. I think the thing about this book is that the entire team is important.
Yeah.
So when you lose, I think it'll be a great book as long as the team works on it. And if they don't, it will be a less great book.
Yeah.
And that'll just be the way it goes. I'm just happy we've gotten these issues as we've gotten them so far. I love this Clinton Barton so much.
Yeah. Well, so with new wonderful things starting to be excited about, we also have to have the other side of the fence with great things coming to an end.
I feel like this has been ending as long as Brian Bendis has run on the Avengers. Is this it? Is it over?
This is the last issue.
Yeah. Because the arc finished last issue, and then this was like epilogue.
Like the coda, yeah.
So like 35 issues, and that was over the course of 2 months?
It was just a little over 2 years. It was because it launched in September, right?
Yeah.
So September of this year, and they did 35 issues.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
They pioneered quintuple shipping.
Yeah. It was basically a year and a half's worth of comics in a year.
You know, let's take a little anecdote away from it, but on the topic of Uncanny X-Force, I was actually talking to Remender this week, and we were talking about double shipping and the concept of double shipping, and he said, "Do you think it's too much?" Because that's what everybody's kind of saying. And I was like, you see, that's the problem. It's kind of your fault. I was like, because it started with Uncanny X-Force, and do you remember when we were doing the podcast, and like we're like, is this weekly now? Like, didn't this just come out? And we didn't notice for like 3 months because it was so good, and because we were enjoying it so much, and I really think that the success of Uncanny X-Force double shipping led to Marvel going double ship crazy, and now we get all new X-Men weekly and all these.
Well,
other
we didn't notice it also because it was the only one doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now every Marvel Now book does it. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. It's too much. They've got to slow it down.
There is such a thing as too much of a good thing, or too much of a thing that's okay.
Yep.
Agreed. There's definitely a thing as too much of a thing that's okay. It makes you think about like, boy, I really don't like this, and you keep putting it in my face.
Yeah. I don't know if it's too much of a good thing, but then the problem is that too much affects the good thing and turns it into an okay thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing is that, like, you know, like, honestly, like, I think David Marquez is a great artist, but, like, not having him in an all-new X-Men has me a little worried.
Yeah.
You know, I think Marquez is great, and I love what he's done in Ultimate Spider-Man, so I'll be curious to see how it goes. But, like, I think a big part of all-new X-Men has been imminent. A big part of Uncanny X-Force was Opania, you know, and...
Yeah, but these guys can't even... Most of these guys can't even do monthly, so... You know, if you're going to go more than that, it's just that's just the game now. You know, the game is now rotating artists.
Yeah,
just get
true.
Used
yeah,
to it.
And as long as you can get them that are somewhat, you know, like, hey, if Uncanny X-Force was going to relaunch, like if they were going to do this and they did Opania, Nodo, and Ribic, like I would not complain at all. But those are, you know, but the problem is that you get a big name to launch it, and then the next name kind of is a little step down.
Well, that's subjective. Yeah. You've also got to have, I mean, like realistically, you have to have farm leagues to a certain extent, you know, and you have to stay under budget. Maybe they pay a lot to the guy who's the big name, and then the one, you know, in order to get through, they pay less to the, you know, I don't know. But I do think it's really interesting that however many years ago, you know, 3-4 years ago, everyone was complaining about late books, and it is not an issue anymore. Jim brought that up in his column he does on Mondays. You know, it's not a thing anymore, and this is the other side of that coin.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
You've got your cake, take a bite.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
Look at you with the catchphrase.
Let's get back to this particular book, though. I thought it was a nice way to end it. It seemed to be all about Phantom X, this whole series, which my favorite character of the book. I liked him fine, but so that part I didn't love as much.
Well,
but.
even before getting to the Phantom X stuff, I mean, I think Remender deserves a slow clap for finally putting a fucking stake in the coffin of Dokken and just ending that whole awfulness.
Yes.
So so you know, Dokken, you know, Wolverine kills Dokken, and now that's a great character moment for Wolverine. He's conflicted with the fact that he killed his own son, that he screwed up, you know, having a child, and he killed him. the Phantom X stuff was like, you know, I knew something was coming because we've seen so many teasers for the upcoming X-Force with Sam Humphries writing it, right. With Lady Phantom X. I was curious to see how they go. I mean, taking the idea that Phantom X had three brains and they tried to bring him back, but they got three versions of him, and the evil one was like in black and just like was like, yeah, I'm bad. See you later. And like, it was just like
yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it was all right. I'll be curious to see where Humphries picks it up from here. But I thought it's a nice end, and honestly, 35 issue run, Remender's got a lot to be proud of.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, this would be great. To
have him an omnibus. Has he had an omnibus before?
Yeah, they did an omnibus with the Frankencastle stuff already.
Okay, yeah, right. Yeah,
so,
but everybody gets an omnibus.
Everybody gets there's some distinction between a true quote unquote omnibus and just like an oversized collection. Because if you look on the spine, the design is. I was thinking about it as I was looking at my shelf the other day, and like I had
completely impractical to read.
Well, yeah, because there is a distinct difference between like I have the Inferno, which we call the omnibus, but it's slightly different than the X-Men omnibus. You know, like I don't know what they're doing, but anyway. So, all right. So, Uncanny X-Force, I miss you already. So,
are you guys reading Comeback?
I'm not. I have the first issue. I haven't read it yet, and now I have.
Ron,
the second
you
issue.
Are the guy who needs to read the Comeback because you like time travel.
It's good. Is it good?
It is good. It's okay. Very good. Michael Walsh is a guy who a lot of people probably don't know, but he's an artist who I think is going to be a bigger deal in the upcoming years. It's a person I'm going to say to keep your eye on. Who comes from the Chris Somni school, I think, of art a little bit. Very good. This is like a story of basically, I like the first issue, but I like the second issue also. You know, it made it better. So I was like, all right, we've got something here. It's a company that, you know, for money will go back in time and change events for somebody who asked them to do it, you know, for pay. There's, you know, sort of an element of recall or actually, no, that's not right because that's not time travel. But, you know, we've seen stories like this. It's not on, I think, the Secret, that abandoned Hickman book, whatever. But it's a time travel thing. And they find out that, you know, hey, this isn't what we thought it was, you know, and some people are getting screwed over by this. And that it sort of jerks back and forth from page to page. You've got to try to keep track of it. And it's sort of confusing because it's confusing for the main character, which isn't to say it's badly written. They're just, you know, they're throwing a lot of information and stuff at you. It's a good looking book. It's a fun book. It's a neat sort of near term sci-fi, I think. Like, it's our world, but if somebody's got time travel. And it's absolutely worth a look as a sort of a fun new sci-fi book with a nice clean sort of look to it.
Cool. Yeah. No. It's on my list. Maybe now after hearing this, I'll catch up and read the two issues this weekend.
Yeah. You were definitely the guy that I was like, oh, you, Ron. Because
I remember when it came out, it was like the first issue. I like flipped through it and I was like, it didn't really grab me art wise, and so I kind of put it aside. It was like one of those times where I ran out of time. Sure. But I'll check it out. Yeah.
And they've all been huge weeks lately, so yeah. I certainly don't blame you for that. But. Yeah. It's one of those, because there's this glut of books going on constantly, it's easy to miss stuff, and it's definitely something I think that is worth taking a look at.
Yeah.
Cool. Fun, crazy time travel.
Excellent.
So this week, rather quietly actually, actually wasn't this week so much, it was last month, but this week in full, we had the return of the New Gods in Wonder Woman 15. The New Gods... It shows you how much people get upset about things and then stop. Is when they relaunched the New 52, everyone was upset that New Gods were nowhere to be found, and then now they're back and no one's talking about it. But not only the return of New Gods, but the return of Cliff Chang. And I think overall, and I reread the last couple of issues of Wonder Woman, I still really love this giant tapestry that Azrael's created. I know Ron's fallen off of it, but...
No, I'm on.
I thought you were faltering on the book, but
no.
I really love this family dynamic they've played up with the Zeus's family. I really like Wonder Woman's character in this book, and I think, of course, when Chang comes back to draw it, it elevates the book to top tier status.
No, I was wavering on it, and then the issue that revealed Orion, I was like, oh yeah, count me in, and this is what I've been waiting for. I didn't expect to see Wesley Willis.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, even down to the talking, like headbutt. You know, like, I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty transparent. But hey, whatever works. I love the way Chang draws Orion and his little scooter thing, and just the helmet and everything. Oh, it's just great. Like, it's still a nod to Kirby, but it's updated enough to be slightly, you know, different. And yeah, no, I mean, I was a little bit like, I kind of, you know, like I'm still a little wavering on that grand tapestry and the god stuff, because that doesn't really interest me. I like how that one god just comes out of nowhere and grabs Wonder Woman. now her bracelets are upgraded. Like, that was just like, okay.
There you go.
Hephaestus.
Yeah, he just appears, and okay, I'm going to touch this. Okay, I'll see you later.
But like the other part that's fun about that is the sort of backstory between her and him, that's been built the whole time. And I think I'm like Connor. My favorite part is the sort of Olympian myth part of it. I was actually a little hesitant on the Orion thing, but I actually really like that character. I think he's really interesting. I like that he seems totally fine and sort of goes into rage fits. I think that's a really interesting sort of thing to present, especially in contrast to Diana.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'll take you. Let's do it. And it's fun. I thought this was a really good issue. Probably the best one in a while.
Yeah. This is a great issue. Really, really fun.
There's a lot of BPRD books lately. I know there kind of always are. I've been reading the 1940 blank series since the beginning. They started with six. I guess it was six. This is the third one, BPRD 1948, number three. And I will tell you that the first two issues of this didn't actually do all that much for me. If you remember, the original one was done by Gabriel Bá and Fabio Moon. Mm-hmm. Completely disappeared, by the way.
Yeah.
Being sexy is really hard work.
I assume they're working on something. They have to. I mean, I can't imagine they're idle. So, yeah. But being sexy is hard work.
It may have tired them out. But this was really fun because there was actually a lot of young Hellboy in it, like a lot. And he's sort of been hinted at and been in the background, but he's actually a character in this issue, and you get to know him and sort of spend more time in the situation of him sort of growing up on an army base, and he has a military liaison, and Broom is away from him, and just some of the stuff that's going on, and it was it's fun to spend time with that character. The series is being drawn by Max Fiamura, who you may remember from Four Eyes,
and
some Spider-Man stories along the way. I think Joe Kelly brought him along on, but
the Rhino ones, I think.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Like, there's so many BPRD things coming out. It feels like I'm starting to lose track because their timeline sort of shifts and the world's changing. And then I went back and I read some of the older books at the same time, and I was just sort of having a hard time keeping my finger on it. So one of the things that's nice about this is that exactly when it takes place. You know what's going on. But this is a great issue. This is the best of the three so far of this series. And it should have interesting consequences because there's still that whole backstory of Hellboy of his growing up that I find really interesting.
Hell youngin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He already is a boy. He just never changed his name.
So as evidenced 2 weeks ago when I had the pick of the week, I was very, very high on Avengers number one. And while I still absolutely love Opeña's art, Avengers number two is like, oh, okay. Well, not much happened there.
Can I completely reverse on you?
Okay.
I was fairly lukewarm on the first one.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved this issue.
So we absolutely did a flip.
It's a Christmas miracle.
I read this and I was like, that was awesome. And
I really liked it more than one.
It was a gathering the team thing, but from a term of character standpoint, the scene specifically that stands out to me is that when Tony and Steve went and had drinks with Carol Danvers and Jessica Drew. All of those characters were so strongly rendered, and the whole time I'm thinking, this dialogue is fantastic the whole way through. It was wonderful dialogue.
Peter hugging Tony.
Yeah, it just the whole thing. I think it crackled with some of that humanity that I think the first one didn't have a little bit because it was very like militaristic. And there's this
first one was very much setting the plot. This one was about interesting the characters. So.
Yeah, I guess in that context that somewhat makes sense. I mean, I just. Yeah, I mean, I guess I was just taken by, like, not much happening aside from getting some exposition from Ex-Nihilo and then the team kind of coming together. But it was – don't get me wrong. It was enjoyable. It was awesome.
I don't think I understood it last time. Like, yeah. I really got it as a whole thing. I almost wish that they'd done this as sort of a double issue, the first one, and really, like laid everything out. This is where things – this happens to me a lot. Like, a first issue doesn't usually have time to do a lot. It's just sort of a teaser. And then the second one solidifies whether you want to go forward with something or not. But I came out of this just going, all right. That was fun.
It's funny you say that because that's similar to how I felt about All New X-Men. I thought that I would have been I thought the first two issues if they had been joined together as like one double-sized one, kind of like with Saga, that would have served it a little better. But I just had a mental note now. I need to go back to the post about the Avengers the icons on the roster and update Eden Feces code name to Manifold. So, yeah. Which is so much better than Eden Feces. So.
Who
is it?
Who is that? Because it's related somehow to Gateway, right?
Well, yeah, he was in Secret Warriors, and he is – I got into an argument with a friend of mine. One of my friends says that he is Gateway's like grandson or relative of Gateway, but all the research I've done online, because I haven't read Secret Warriors, says that he's like a student of Gateway. Like, he's an Aborigine, and he's a student of Gateway. Like, Gateway has kind of taken him under his wing. And Gateway, for those who don't know, was the Aborigine mutant who has teleportation powers, and when the X-Men lived in Australia, he was their mode of transportation to go from Australia and to get back. So, which is, I love the tying back into that and all that sort of stuff. So, but his powers are like, he has very Scarlet Witchian powers, which are like, he can fold time and space. Like,
yeah, so that was interesting.
Yeah, they're using him to, you know, teleport basically to Mars, which is kind of awesome. I can't wait for the next issue though. Totally.
I think that, and the other thing I do want to touch on is that, like, you sort of pointed out, didn't feel like a lot happened. I think Opeña absolutely killed, just really did a good job in terms of the characters' body language and faces, and the acting of the characters was really strong. Yeah. In sort of their interactions with each other, and just little things like Tony and Steve, like sort of looking at the monitors in the beginning as Steve has coffee, you know, and the way that they're standing with each other. And
Opeña's a monster. I mean, it's amazing how great he. I mean, like, we knew how great he is, but this is just it's amazing.
So. It also shows though that no matter how good the artist is, that hair that gave Carol Danvers is awful.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
There's nothing to be done with it.
That's all.
No matter how talented you are.
Thank Joe Quesada for that.
But if you just look at how she sits and how she carries herself,
the body language, everything else is fantastic. I like
that one page where basically he's like, "You talk, Steve. It's not going to be good." And he just talks really. Do I need to even ask you, soldier? Like, those are great lines. Yeah. So that was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
So
the countdown continues. Hellblazer number 298, one step closer to the end.
Oblivion.
Fuck this shit. I'm just saying, Karen Berger walked.
do you think that's what put her over the edge?
It might be.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised.
The timing is the same.
I've interviewed her. I've talked to her about. She's, you know, this character is actually pretty closely tied to her career.
Yeah.
You know, he showed up in Swamp Thing that she edited. He's been a constant throughout Vertigo, and now they're taking it away from her and creating a Disney version.
Yep.
And I, you know, if I'm her, that's a pretty strong symbol of where things are going. I don't know. This is all speculation. It's a thing. On the one hand, I'm sad to see it go. On the other hand, it was a really fun issue and a fun story. This starts the last arc, basically the last three issue story of the series. And you know, it's just John the whole time, like he's seen a portent and he's gonna die. And he keeps telling everybody about it, and he just got married a little. And she's like, "Will you stop saying that?" And he's like, "No, it's just like, well, you've tricked before." And he's like, "I don't think it's going to happen this time." Yeah. I'm just like, "Oh, this is so final." And
you think he's going to die?
No,
no,
no. The whole story, like the thing about Constantine, is every story is the same. Is that he's put up against impossible odds, and he tricks the demon.
Right,
but
wouldn't that be a great twist? He gets hit by a bus.
That would be awesome.
If the last page isn't him giving that British two-finger salute, then I don't know what to tell you. You know what I mean? Like that has to be it. Where
well,
he, you know,
will they show? Smart. Will they show? Do you think they'll show him in the last issue? Him going to buy his short-legged pants and his socks, maybe, for, you know, as we've seen in the new series. Or?
Oh.
I love it. I'm rebel.
And his fucking penny loafers.
Where can I get white socks to go with black shoes?
God.
I mean, the best thing I can say about it is that. You know, it's not the only thing I say, but you know, at least they're definitely going out. It's not a whimper. It's not like they're just putting some people on it to run it out. You know, Pete Milligan really gets it entirely, and he's built up a really interesting, sort of the most interesting personal story around him, his personal life, and the people he's involved with much more than anybody since Ed Garth Ennis, who did the best job of that, and Giuseppe Chemical is a monster on it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to reading the next stories, but this was a really good one. So
talk about the real shame of the whole DC and Wildstorm and all this stuff folding, I think is going to end up being the story of the Whistling Skull. It's a long story, no, but I mean, but just the fact that B. Clay Moore and Tony Harris had this idea and got it greenlit and it took forever to get done, and then while they were working on it, the New 52 happened and the DC Comics and Wildstorm folding and all that stuff, and I mean, because this was fantastic.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like they're trying to wedge it into the JSA.
Yeah.
But as soon as it started, I'd forgotten about that and lost it, which makes that part feel more artificial.
Yep.
Which is going to have a negative effect on people who bought it because they think it's part of the JSA.
Right, yeah.
What does this have to do with anything?
They had it in Elseworlds, though?
They had that little moment. No, they're not. I mean, Elseworlds doesn't exist. It's just.
The original Liberty Files was in Elseworlds.
Was it? Yeah, so I guess yeah. So then. Yeah.
I don't know.
And these aren't.
The original miniseries was fantastic. It was an Elseworlds set in World War something.
Yeah, yeah, and these aren't like the true, you know, JSA. Like these are ciphers for.
Right, because it's an Elseworlds story. It's not characters in the DCU at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It takes place in an Elseworlds world.
Yeah.
Well, either way, because it does exist, the issue itself exists on its own. It's its own thing, and it really is one of those ones that it doesn't explain a ton. It just throws you in, and you start going, which I like. That really works for me. For me, the story of this is it feels very British.
Yes.
Very British characters, which is I thought Moore did a really excellent job on that, by the way, because a lot of times when Americans try to do that, it doesn't go over. But I thought it was pretty good. But the story for me is Tony Harris, and say what you will about what he said, what he will, but he's doing the best work I have seen him do in years.
Oh, this is old school Tony Harris cartooning. This is the,
it's not even like I don't remember seeing anything that he did before he started using basically very heavy photo tracing.
Yeah,
but,
This reminds me of old Starman stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. So
yeah, definitely. But it's even more like finely rendered, I think, than that. It's more finished, I guess. And you know, he has a very specific style, not even just like what his characters look like and how they act, but how he builds a page. He doesn't use a ton of panels. He uses, you know, 3-4 page panels from a page max. And he has his own thing, you know, not unlike the way that somebody like J.H. Williams has his own thing.
Yep.
We just haven't seen him enough and you know, to sort of give him that kind of credit. But
really struck me about this was some of the page layouts where I thought that had that J.H. Williams, which honestly wasn't. It's not like, you know, Tony was doing that for years as well.
Exactly.
Too.
So, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it just reminded me. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is good. Tony Harris. This is good.
We don't tend to put him in that club for whatever reason. And maybe it's because we haven't seen him very much, you know, recently.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last Tony Harris thing I read.
He does a lot of covers.
Yeah, exactly. But he can do a heck of an interior. And in this one, you know, he was proud of the fact that he was just drawing this straight up. He doesn't even go take a bunch of photos of people in a skull mask and do it. It's a weird character, by the way.
Yeah, a very weird character. Yeah, the design. I was like, I don't know if I like the design, but I'm gonna go with it. So yeah.
Obviously, I was a big fan of the original mini, which now I'm annoyed that Josh hasn't read that. I would have bought it for him for Christmas if I knew that.
Sorry.
But it was because that was a great, you know, JSA as World War II spy story.
That does sound good.
This wasn't the original writer, which is why I didn't pick this up. Stan Jolly was the original writer, so I didn't get it.
Yeah, I think that's all. The only tie it has to the JSA Liberty Files is the fact that they needed to put it in a universe. Right. And did you read this or not, Gunnar?
I just said I didn't get it. But
oh, okay, I'm sorry. No, I missed that. And I'm just saying, no, because the JSA was only in it for like the first three pages.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I'm curious. I'll probably go back and look, especially considering how much you guys both like it, which is interesting. So whenever you both like something, it's always
it's a rare
worth looking at. So, but I will keep your eye out for that original mini. It was fantastic.
So we want to thank everybody who heeded our call this month and did their shopping over at Amazon. The holidays, by the time you hear this, Christmas will be a couple of days away. And many of you did your holiday shopping via Amazon through ifanboy.com/Amazon. So we want to thank everybody. Over 1,200 items were shipped from Amazon to members of the iFan base. So that's amazing. So, So thank you everybody for continuing to help support iFanboy.
And only 40% of those were Connor.
Right, I'm down this year.
And if you need to do any other shopping throughout the year, ifanboy.com/Amazon is always there. Just go click on the banner, go into Amazon. Any of your purchases at Amazon go to help us. And also, as we reach the end of the year, end of 2012, we want to thank everybody. Especially, we want to thank those iFanboy members who are out there who've stuck with us. I know the membership program kind of, you know, faded a little away over the past year. We've been busy and with being at Graphly, stuff like that. But stay tuned to 2013. We're going to make the iFanboy membership worth having. So thank you for those who've stuck with us and look forward to more of it in 2013. So,
you know, you may think that we didn't need you anymore, but you have to trust us when we say that we do.
Yeah.
You know, you're still directly contributing to the operation and output of iFanboy in a big way. So if you're contributing and you're still enjoying it, you know, it's not like, hey, look at this. We're using this money to bring the site to you directly.
Yeah.
and the podcast and stuff like that. And we don't take that lightly at all. So thank you so much. And we appreciate it immensely still, as we always have. It's incredibly selfless and generous. And, you know, thanks to everybody for you know, taking a part of the whole thing.
Yep, for getting on board with us and seeing us and taking this crazy journey with us. We love it. We love you all. So, all right, back to the comics.
Daredevil 21 did a couple things I liked a lot. One, it ended the storyline, the current storyline, where we realized Matt wasn't as crazy as we thought, as Foggy thought, and it was all revealed that it was a plot to make him look crazy, to which Foggy went, hey, sorry, my bad. And I liked that Matt went, no.
Yeah, that was
no,
good.
No, not
yeah.
Sorry, my bad. You yeah. Didn't trust me. You're supposed to be my best friend. Fuck this.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Cause
sounds like Mark Waid.
Too often, there'll be people be like, so what are you going to do? And everyone patches it up. I mean, he really did betray Matt. So yeah. It's going to take a while to get over that, I think. And I like that part a lot. It adds an interesting dynamic. They're not still healed. They may never be fully healed off of that. I like that. The other thing was, I liked that they kind of just threw in the Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And didn't tell anybody, didn't say anything, didn't really explain it.
It was great. I liked it. But it didn't spoil what's going on in Superior Spider-Man.
No.
It was, yeah, like it fit in. I thought it was good. Yep. And it makes sense in continuity-wise. You know, I'm always bitching about continuity. But yeah, it totally worked. So, yeah.
I liked it a lot. Good issue.
Cool.
You know what's stupid?
How good Saga is?
Yes, it's exactly what's stupid.
Holy
it's just like
crap. It's not even fair.
I break my rule about this in that we've talked about the order. I read Saga first every time.
Yeah, no, you can't not. And what's so funny, what people don't realize, so 8 issues came out in 2012. Half of them were picks of the week.
Was it half?
Yeah, we picked 4 total.
Yeah.
And the problem is like, I think we could probably pick every issue as pick of the week, but it's like, what more can you say? Because it just continues to be fucking amazing.
I'm really amazed that a lot of times you put so much stock in a creator, and you're like, well, everything they do is pretty good. And they go away for a bit, and it's just very rare that somebody comes back with this much thunder, with this much sort of just everything you wanted and more. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that this book would have been as good as it is, but.
Yeah.
And you know, like he just introduced a couple more characters, and the sort of dynamic here with the parents is it's fascinating.
Yep.
Just a great, great book.
I found myself preoccupied with wondering what disease the giant had.
Yeah.
Because that was some really bad pustules.
Oh, that was
and,
what really struck me with this issue, though, is that it almost is like, and maybe Kirkman learned this from Vaughn, or maybe Vaughn learned it from Kirkman. But Saga is starting to feel a lot like The Walking Dead in that, like, I don't think it's going to matter what format you read it in.
No, not at all.
I mean, like each issue doesn't feel like in this issue, it just feels like this is the next bit of chunk that you're reading, and you know, you can go read the trade, and you'll probably get that same satisfaction out of it. It's just,
but it still has a you get to the you know this beginning, middle, and end to each issue.
Yeah,
it has a driving point where it doesn't feel like just the middle of something.
True. Yeah. No, but like this end revealing Gwendolyn felt very much like a Walking Dead like end of issue reveal that I now reading in issues I understand Kirkman does that, but reading in hardcovers I never picked up on. You know, like it's a subtle storytelling method that I think is happening here that will lend it to be readability across, you know, because things with Marvel Comics and even with Vertigo and stuff like that, you get, okay, this is the end of the issue and here's the next issue, but this can just read like a saga. Huh.
I think if you read Why the Last Man, you're going to notice that in there too.
Yeah, probably. I haven't read Why in a while.
So
because
this
it would be like a last page thing and then the next page would just carry it over. You knew it in issue, but you didn't feel it in the reading it.
Yeah.
This was the first time, and we picked issues 1, 2, 4, and 6. This was the first 8 broke the pattern.
Yeah. Oh,
we got 2, 4, 6. So.
So.
Yeah.
So I know I said I wasn't going to read it, but the curiosity got the better of me, and I read Thunderbolts number 2. And now in 2 issues, it's crossed over into the absurd where I just I laughed, and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to keep reading this to see how ridiculously bad this can be. So get this. Everyone on the team has integrated red into their costume, including the Punisher, whose skull is now red.
I think you're supporting terrorism.
I know. So you've got Red Hulk, Elektra, Deadpool, and now Punisher made his skull red. And they even referenced it in the book, and he explained. He's like, oh, it's some gamma radiation protection thing. It's like, fuck you. And so then Venom changes his white spider to be red to go along with everyone. And it was just like, really? And like, it completely flushes everything – all the characterization that Loeb and Parker and Bendis worked on with the Red Hulk and just is completely flushed down the toilet. I don't know who this character is. This is like existing in another Marvel world that isn't the normal Marvel world, and it's hysterical. It's like almost
hey,
like
X-Men. It's doing this, you would love it.
Yeah, it's almost like X-Men Forever.
I think. Well, there you go. I think he loves it the same way he loves the Neil Adams stuff.
Yep. Exactly. So awful. Yeah. Awful.
You can call me crazy, but I love Happy.
Yeah.
With this issue, I loved it. I decided
it was great.
Yeah. This issue brought it home. We've said it's only a 4-issue mini, and the first two were kind of rough on telling you what exactly you were reading, but three really made sense, and I don't think it needs to be longer based on what the story we're being told. I just love that it's a twisted little holiday story. Kind of surprisingly full of heart, considering how awful everyone in it is. But
I think this is one of those things where, because you know Grant Morrison, you can give it the benefit of the doubt. You know, if I'd read those first two issues and they were by somebody else, I might have been like, I don't know where this is going. But you know, I'm willing to give Grant Morrison the benefit of the doubt here, because he's obviously talented enough, he's skilled enough to have a payoff to it, and you know, we're seeing that now. It's just sort of. Too bad for beginners, I guess. But
It's a total profane and awful story about Christmas that is actually kind of nice.
Yep,
which
exactly.
Is weird in a weird way.
Yep,
I really liked it a lot. This is a really great issue.
The fact that it just says everything to me that this isn't coming out from Vertigo.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, just that's the strangest. These are two people who made their names on Vertigo.
Yeah. So
anyway.
So, Indestructible Hulk number 2, I was really excited to read because I really liked Wade's take on the Hulk and the whole premise and stuff like that. And I liked it so much. Well, no, you'd think that because I liked it so much, I would love to have it rehashed in the entire first two-thirds of the book. But, you know, maybe I'm stupid. Maybe I'm thick in the head. Maybe I don't understand. Maybe I'm not as smart as you. Maybe I don't get these things. But I guess fine. You want to have Tony?
I'm smart, Michael. I'm not dumb like Pop says.
But so he has for a completely unnecessary Iron Man come in and rehash everything that happened in the first issue, and it was just kind of like, oh well, can we get on with this, please? So
I really liked it.
Kind of annoyed by it. So
I really liked it.
What is going on?
I thought it was nice. I thought it was cool characterization. And it got into the fact, like, the bit at the end where Tony went to talk to himself, you know, to say that everything they've been saying about him was right.
Yeah.
And that he's intimidated by the fact that there is this one other guy who is smarter than him.
Yeah, and I like the interaction a lot between Banner.
The interaction was good. Yeah, I don't know, but I mean, I don't know. Part of me liked, and the fact that Iron Man popped up in Thor annoyed the hell out of me too. I don't know.
That was only for like a little bit.
Yeah, I know, but it was just insult after injury. I don't know.
What is the insult?
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway,
the insult is the fucking yellow costume.
I thought the art was great. Though.
I like the fact that Tony had to basically psych himself up in the mirror because
that was the nice
intimidated that was, by Batter's genius. Yeah. That was really the
button on the issue. I thought.
Yeah.
Well, talk about guest stars, Ron.
Yeah.
The guy for Fugitive Gauntlet number 3.
Yep.
Finally get Pete. Oh, maybe only on the phone.
But still in existence of Pete.
Still Pete. Yep. And the Phoenix Foundation.
Yep.
That's all you
need. I squealed a little. I love this. I love it. Are you reading the back matter?
Yes, I didn't read this one though, but that's great. So much other stuff to read.
Yeah, it's great. Actually, Josh, I would suggest, I mean, maybe if they reprint the trade or whatever, read the back matter because it's fascinating about working in TV and all that. The it's fascinating, so I think you'd dig it. But I'm loving this. I love it.
This totally captures the feel of the characters in the show. It really does in a way that I would not have prepared myself for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff. So those are the books those are only some of the books that came out. Lots of things came out this week. We want to talk about those books. If you go to fanboy.com, you can make your own pull list. You can rate and review your books, and you can make your own pick of the week. And we're going to round out the top 5 picks of the week from the community. And I have to say that this is a nice, healthy spread of numbers, as you'd expect from a week like this.
Yeah, no, it was nice.
Number 5, Thor God of Thunder number 3 with 9.5% of the picks of the week. Number 4 was Uncanny X-Force 35 with 10.2%. Number 3 was Avengers number 2 with 11.3%. And number 2, Hawkeye number 6 with 17.8%. And number 1 was, not surprisingly, Saga number 8 with 33.3% of
the Saga Batman block continues.
But that's
you screwed it up, Connor.
Did I?
Well. the Fibonacci sequence that we have of Saga wins, but that's okay. It's
Fibonacci sequence. I'm impressed. Good job.
I know that is not an apt
analogy.
Did
you get that? Did you get that from Square One Television? You remember Square
I didn't get
One?
That. We didn't have that.
Square One was a PBS show about math, and there was a whole.
Yes.
There
Square
was
One
a,
is awesome. Watch it.
Oh no! What was the one that they put into schools? Is it Channel One, Channel Zero, Channel?
No, Channel Zero was the Brian Wood comic.
That's true. I think it was Channel One that was like the science, the educational in schools. Anyways, I kind of remember Square One.
Well, yeah, so Square One, and they had like a fake Dragnet, like it was MathNet.
That was awesome.
Yep. And
do you know where I got Fibonacci sequence from?
No, where?
School.
Oh, no. Wow. Okay. Well, I got it from Square
I took
One.
Math
so.
Classes.
Yeah. Oh, I hated it.
They taught me things that I remember.
Ron, I was actually in a focus group for that show.
Were you really?
Yeah, when I was a kid, we had the little dial.
Oh, MathNet was awesome. Remember MathMan? MathMan. I love math. Oh,
that's what I learned what Google was.
Yeah. No, and on MathNet, one of the things was that it was the clue was a Fibonacci sequence. It was like tiles on the wall. And they're like, wait a minute, that's a Fibonacci sequence. And they explained it, and I was like, oh, fascinating. See, if I had Square One in high school, I wouldn't have had to go to summer school in 10th grade, so because I failed the Regents. So. Anyway.
I just cheated on those.
I'm not going
to
do this.
Everybody loves the little personal bits about iFanboy. There you go. I went to summer school, summer between 10th and 11th grade.
Was it at all like summer school, the movie?
No, it was not. There was no cool teacher in a Hawaiian shirt.
Did anyone go to the bathroom?
No one went to the bathroom the whole time? Yeah, no.
There were no hot surfer girls. No. You didn't go to the amusement park.
I got
to
tell you, it was depressing.
Not funny at all.
Not fun at all. No, yeah. So
Shoop.
All right, on to the user. I love that. The movie's great. On to the user reviews.
I saw Dave at the supermarket once in Burbank. He's like, it's the guy from summer school.
Okay, so on to the user reviews. Our first user review comes from The Whack One and reviewed Captain America number 2 from Rick Remender and John Romita Jr. and gave the story a 2 out of 5 and art a 5 out of 5. And 0.5% of you all made it your pick of the week. And The Whack number 1 says, I honestly think this book would be better without words. The art team knocks it out of the park. The lines are crisp, the storytelling awesome, and White's colors are engrossing. The texture he provides is beyond description. I really like the panels with Cap cooking in his shield. There was a panel that showed each of his suit scales and I stared at for a solid minute. Wow. It's a shame that this team is on such a lame story. Overall, the package is okay. The story doesn't interest me and the writing is choppy, but the art is some of the best I've seen. If you want a strangely paced sci-fi story with characters you don't really need to care about but are beautifully illustrated, then this is your book. Seems like it might be going somewhere, but I won't be around for the ride.
Yeah. I care about Captain America.
Yeah, I care. I thought it was an interesting choice to like have a lot of time pass in between issues.
Was it a year?
Well, a year in Zola Land. Who knows how long it was? But the art was good. I don't know if I share. I mean, Dean White had some help on this issue, and you could tell, and with Lee Lowridge and some other colorist. But it was good.
I think this is the best John Romita I've seen in a while, but the last time I saw him was on Avengers and I didn't really like what was going on there.
Yeah.
I'll give it to him. I don't think it was bad. I think it's a strange Captain America story.
Yeah. Well,
I like it a lot. I wasn't around for the first issue. I didn't really like the first issue. It was probably my least favorite of the Marvel Now books I read.
Yeah.
But I like this one a lot. I think this is similar to Josh's feelings on Avengers. Mm-hmm. And also maybe Hulk, but I like that it's weird sci-fi adventure Cap because that's the old Captain America. That's basically what kind of they used to do with him. That stuff.
I'm curious what it's going to be because I don't know what it's going to be yet.
Strange. Me too. Yeah, I want to see where it goes. Yeah, so
and I don't say strange in a bad way. I say it in a good way.
Yep. And I like that. I like it. It's challenging and it's, you know, but I want to be challenged by my book. So
Andrew Gabori reviewed Nightwing 15, gave the story 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and 0.1% of the fan base picked Nightwing number 15 as their pick of the week. And Andrew Gabori says, Dick Grayson is always about the optimism, so naturally when the Joker strikes, it's about making his worldview turn decidedly negative. The Joker's knowledge of the Bat family's identities is most obvious here as he goes after people only associated with Dick Grayson. This is more explicit than in other tie-ins like Batman and Batgirl, where it's left a little more ambiguous about what the Joker knows. Higgins' return to writing Nightwing is welcome, as he really has Grayson's voice and tone down pat. The art is all so clean when done by Barrows, but suffers a little bit when it shifts to Ferreira. Overall, a great addition to Death of the Family, and I agree with Andrew. This was one of the stronger tie-ins, and this series is always better when it's drawn by Barrows and written by Higgins.
Who was the other writer who's been on it?
DeFalco did an arc.
Well, I think
your buddy, your favorite writer.
I'm really torn on DeFalco these days. because I really enjoyed the parts of the Marvel book when he's in charge, and I liked it. He was interesting. But everything I've ever read that he's written is bad to me.
I even buy the issues he wrote. I just didn't read them.
I think that's a good call.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since I read Nightwing. I was like, oh, yeah, Nightwing. This was really good. This is one of the best time, probably the best time I've read so far.
I'm gonna read this.
Yeah.
All right, so those are the user reviews. If you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can rate your books and write a review, and we'll read it on the show. And it's always great to hear from everybody from the iFan base to hear what they think of each books that come out this week. It's also good to hear from you via email. And our first email comes from Sean, who is Canadian D on the site, and says, let's set this up. I'm kind of a DC fanboy. I jumped onto DC and monthly comics as a whole in September 2011 with the New 52. Wow, a new
was
reader.
Was that long ago?
It was that long ago.
Jesus.
I enjoy the New 52 and the DC Universe, both old and new. Before then, I read mostly trades, but I never read X-Men, and while I enjoyed X-Men First Class, I never had any compulsion to pick up the series. With Marvel now in full swing, I've contemplated picking up all new X-Men number one. I have read it, though I don't think it took much away from it, and I hadn't read AVX and didn't have any kind of context for the series. However, I heard so much about it, and you guys spoke so highly of it, I feel as if I should give it another try. My question to you is, all new X-Men a truly great jumping on point for someone new to the X-Men? Should I give it another go? Are there any other Marvel Now books you think are a tried and true DC fan would enjoy?
I hate the term jumping on point.
Yeah. Just start reading it, dude. Just start reading it.
And we talked about this when we talked about, I think it was Uncanny Avengers number one.
Yep.
How the thing that I really liked about it was that I haven't been following what's going on with these people, but I just sort of like you just sort of enter the lane on the highway.
You just jump in
traffic.
Drive
along with everybody.
Yeah, you go.
And you go and you pick up the stuff that's going on. And that is how I learned to read superhero comics. So I don't know why everybody needs to, you know, you just start and you pick up stuff from context and you go for it. In that sense, yeah, it's fine. I mean, all new X-Men, Cyclops is different now than when he was young. So they take the young version to meet the new version. Go.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's great. It's a great place to start. I mean, these books are designed as well as possible to use the past and continue from the present. So I say absolutely, you know, but it really has to do with whether you like it. It's a Bendis book. It's drawn beautifully. You know, there's 100 other books that you could be reading right now. We talk about them here every week.
Yeah.
You know, which ones are good, and you just have to pick which ones sound good to you.
I still know when people stop giving themselves credit for having intelligence to figure things out, you know? Like, used to people did use this jump on books. And I know they're written differently, but they're not written so differently now that you can't figure things out from context. It really, especially with the Marvel Now books. The Marvel Now books are written exactly where you can jump on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd say any of them. If any of the characters sound appealing to you or any of the things we talked about.
Or the creators.
I mean, yeah.
But the fact that, you know, you like DC and not Marvel, they're just other characters. I mean, the people go back and forth. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's tough. I like the idea of jumping on points from a making it clear, like, this is the point where you should go reading it. But I'm also of the old school, you know, kind of, you're just curious about a book, just buy it. You know, and like, what you don't know, write in. We'll tell you. People on the site will tell you. Other people in the comic shop will tell you. Just give it a shot. You know, and if the story is good, it doesn't matter what you need to know or not need to know. So.
Okay. There's a couple of fun things in it that you hook into. You know, the fact that, I don't know if you seem to like the X-Men, so yeah, try this. Try Uncanny Avengers. You might really like that. Try
Avengers. Try anything. I mean, and yeah. You know, like I what a tried and true DC fan would enjoy. I don't know. I mean, you know, like it's. I mean, I don't.
Good comics about superheroes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, what is the? I don't know what that means anymore. Especially considering DC's not so good. You know. At least in my opinion.
No, I agree with you.
About DC is it's Marvel from before. Now. So
all I can think of a tried and true DC fan is someone who likes a DC character. So if that's a hindrance, then he might not like any Marvel books. But yeah. I think anything that sounds interesting to you, you should pick up and read.
Yeah, it's a good place to take a bunch of samples, and sort of see where you want to go with that. But yeah, this is as good as any. These are good folks making these books. Perry, as in Harry from London, England, says, I was sitting here ruminating on Marvel Now, and I thought, hey. What makes a book uncanny over at Marvel? We have an Avengers book, but we also have an uncanny Avengers book. I'm reading this like I read children's books to my son. We used to have an uncanny X-Men book, and now we have all new X-Men. Are the X-Men no longer uncanny? The X-Force was just plain old X-Force until 2010 when they became uncanny X-Force. So, is the uncanny prefix as arbitrary as it seems, or is there something more logical at work? As a side note, the northeast of England, canny is slang for either very or to describe someone who is kind-hearted, e.g., iFanboy is a canny good website like, or the internet's Paul Montgomery is a reet canny lad. But this probably has nothing to do with comics. That's correct.
there's an uncanny X-Men coming out, so they didn't get rid of
that. Yeah. I'm going to go with no, it doesn't mean a damn thing. It just means that there are some X-Men involved.
I don't know if it doesn't mean anything. Because they clearly chose it for the Avengers book for a reason.
Because it has X-Men involved. It's the mashup of
right, because Uncanny is the flagship X-Men book and Avengers right. is the flagship Avengers book.
I think it's an indicator that there's X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think well, it's interesting because I mean, because Uncanny, it was always Uncanny X-Men. I don't know why they introduced Uncanny into Uncanny X-Men. Actually, that's one aspect I've never been able to find in the annals of history, and it wasn't
Stan Lee-ism.
It wasn't in the
it's a total Stan Lee-ism.
Well, no, but the book didn't launch as Uncanny; it launched as X-Men.
Right, but they changed it later. I think it's a way to describe the book.
Stan Lee was long gone.
Everything was done about what he would do.
I would like to hear the story, that's all.
He wasn't gone, though. But I mean, he was still – he had cover approval, and he was probably still doing titles. Martin Goodman was probably still around at that point, wasn't he?
Anyway, yeah.
Just trying to move books, probably. Yeah, that's probably what it was.
I think it came up during the Warner Roth years. But regardless, you know, when they added it to X-Force, I think that was a way to differentiate it from what had become, because the X-Force name had – the X-Force brand had been so deteriorated. You know, so I think that was kind of clever. And then I think Josh is right. The addition of it in Avengers is to indicate that it's X-Men and Avengers coming together. That's the whole premise of that book. I love the word. I love Uncanny. I think it's great.
It is fun. But yeah. What this letter brings up that I think is clear is that they're going to want to watch it.
Yeah.
That they don't just drive it into the ground like so many other wonderful things that the comics industry is squeezed dry.
It brings up a good question, though, is that they are going to bring Uncanny X-Men back, and that's going to focus on Cyclops and Magneto. And
so there'll be three Uncanny books then.
Yeah, there'll be three.
That's too many. Yeah. Uncanny X-Men, Uncanny X-Force, Uncanny Avengers.
Well, the thing is that I mean, Uncanny Avengers is the new one. You know what I mean? Like, that's the, yeah. You know, so.
I feel like they should change the X-Force name back, because it's, you know, Uncanny X-Force is kind of like the Remenders thing. It's over.
Just change it back to the New Mutants.
Or just call it X-Force.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with that.
Yeah. Apparently, whatever book Remender writes for Marvel will get the Uncanny label.
Yeah.
That guy's uncanny.
So when he ends up on Thor, it'll be Uncanny Thor. Why isn't Uncanny Captain America?
I'd read that.
It's funny because the definition of it is like...
It's strange, isn't it? Weird.
No, it's like if somebody does an impersonation of somebody and it's so good that it's uncanny. That's how I think of it.
Let's find out what the definition is.
Do you
mean to have a supernatural character or origin, eerie, mysterious, being beyond what is normal or expected, suggesting superhuman or natural...
All right, well, it's correct in its usage, at least for the X-Men originally. But for the others, it's definitely used as a signifier for X-Men.
Peculiarly unsettling, as if from supernatural origin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did they change the name?
Because they wanted to give it a qualifier. They all had qualifiers on their titles.
Astonishing.
No, it came after that. I mean,
we know what happened was they had relaunched the book.
Its sales were dropping, and the other books that were still going all had a qualifier. So let's put a qualifier on that. Yeah. So they said, "Oh, well, the Incredible Hulk does well, and then Amazing Spider-Man does well. So why don't we just put a word in front of that? Maybe that'll work."
No, I don't think it's that simple. It's got to be
really.
You read the book. It's got to be that simple.
Yeah.
You should put a dog on this cover.
What issue did it go over? I can't even
over
find
at DC. They put dogs on covers.
Yeah, I can't.
Should we just wait here while you look it up?
Well, no, I'm on the fucking.
Because we're doing a thing here.
I'm on the Wikipedia page.
You're not going to find out why.
We're literally recording a show right now. So
it started off bi-monthly, and then it went monthly in issue 14. Stan Lee was on it for 19 issues.
This is what it's like to hang out with Ron in real life, by the way.
Roy Thomas took over.
For those of you listening, you want to know what it's like to be inside.
How about this? Great. Oh, in issue 42, March 1968, the comic took the dramatic step of killing off Professor Xavier. Intended at the time to be permanent, this was not to last, as number 65 would reveal that he merely faked his own death.
You know, this is finally the show that will get us that Eisner nomination.
I think hold on, I'm going to read some stuff from
other the one where they went to Wikipedia and just read for a while? That's the one.
Oh my God, did you see this picture of Jim Starlin's beard?
All right, so that's the email. You go to contact@fanboy.com. You can write us an email about anything. Anything. We like to talk about anything. If you want to just chat,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
We're skipping voicemails this week because we had so many books we wanted to talk about them all, but you can still call us at 888-FANBOY 326-2697 for anything to use in the show, and just make sure you tell us your name and where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds, and thank you.
Yep. We've also got the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast, which not during the holiday times would come out on Mondays where we talk to creators about books that are coming out that you absolutely can't miss, but with the holidays and everybody's schedules getting crazy, we took the rest of the time off. So we'll be back in January with iFanboy Don't Miss, so go to iTunes, subscribe to it, or you can find it on iFanboy on Monday.
I feel bad trying to talk about the Make Comics podcast.
It's the holidays. Use that excuse. I'm using that excuse for everything. Oh, sorry, the holidays.
I know what happened last week.
Ron didn't pay his cab driver last night. He went, oh, sorry.
That almost happened. I finally hit the point where I'm like, I'll just walk the rest of the way because I'm out of money.
That describes every trip I ever took in Manhattan.
All right.
It's a Make Comics podcast. It'll be back when it comes back.
And go subscribe to it.
I have.
It's good.
I know.
Yeah.
Listen, it's a time thing. Okay?
All right.
It's a project of love.
As we said at the top of the show, this is the last Pick of the Week podcast of 2012, which means next week there won't be an episode. What will there be? There will be the All Media Year-End Roundup we do every year. This is the seventh year. Despite Ron saying on that show that we did it for 6 years, it's actually our seventh year.
Our seventh year?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Shit. All right. I'm sorry.
So that we can talk about the year in movies, TV, podcasts, books, music, and something else. Comics. All right. Comics. So that's fun. It's about 2.5 hours of us being stupid. Hopefully it's entertaining for you. So there you go.
That's 150% more stupid than you normally get.
More stupid for your enjoyment.
We should rebrand this show. The More Stupid iFanboy Podcast.
I bet you there's some people that would call it that.
Yeah, I know. Check out iFanboy. They got Eisners. Check out iFanboy.com for the Peak of the Week review as written by Connor, that I'm assured is there, and more stuff about... you got me. I don't even know how old that is, but... more in-depth comic book balls and important news and discussion topics.
Well done. Well done.
God, when is the word balls not going to be the funniest thing? Because the thing is, the older I get, the funnier the word balls gets.
The funnier they get, too, by the way. Let's all be honest.
There's nothing funny about that. just ask Brian Vaughn about how funny balls are.
Ugh.
That's a treatise. That whole thing with the giant scary balls.
Pustules.
iFanboy.com about to see who we are and how to hook up with us on the social networks that are important to you. Go to twitter.com/iFanboy and facebook.com/iFanboy to stay in touch with new things that are going up on the site with shocking regularity.
You can, and as I mentioned before, you can email us at contact@iFanboy.com and you can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Questions, comments, concerns, you know, corrections, I assume. You can start them all with We love it when you do that.
Yeah, that's even better. And if you like us, go to iTunes and leave a review for this podcast as well as iFanboy Don't Miss and the iFanboy Make Comics podcasts. Leaving reviews help people discover it as well as help spread the word. We appreciate everybody. Like we said earlier in the show, we appreciate everybody's support. And a big part of that is people telling their friends and telling – I see people on Twitter all the time, you know, responding to their friends who are looking for good podcasts or good websites recommending us. And we want to thank everybody for doing that. That means so much to us. You know, we did a little during the year-end show, but this is our last Pick of the Week show of the year. It'll get a little gushy, but like, thank you so much for a great 2012. It's been a blast, and everybody did such
They haven't heard that show yet.
Well, yeah, but they'll hear it again, so I don't know, whatever. but yeah, it was a great year, and we just want to thank everybody for your support. So.
It's like Bartles and James.
Yes.
I can't hear that thank you for your support without taking the Bartles and James.
I agree.
Because we are old.
I know.
Yeah, half our listeners are like, Bartles and what? Huh? Is that like Zima?
better ad campaigns.
Anyway, so we wish everybody happy holidays. We hope you know, for those of you out there who celebrate holidays, hope you had a wonderful one. If it had passed, if it's upcoming, have a great one. Josh and Connor, Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah.
Did you just leave out Jehovah's Witnesses?
No.
You said for those of you who celebrate holidays.
Oh, I did not purposely. Meaning, they're fine. They're
no,
fine.
And you, why do you hate Jehovah's Witnesses?
Well, whatever. All right. So have a great holidays. We hope everybody got what they wanted. So.
And until 2013, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Wait, you're only – what are you changing your name
well,
to
I, then? Well, there are things that I do the last 2 weeks of the year that I don't like to talk about.
Oh, man.
It's a patch thing.
I'm just saying that you're very distinctive.
I change my name for 2 weeks and I go off on a little adventure.
There it is.
You run a completely different kind of business.
Everybody calls you Logan.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's cool. I can't beat that. I'm Josh.
I could have been someone.
Well, so could anyone. You took my dreams from me when I first found you.
I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I built my dreams around you.
The boys of the NYPD chorus are singing "Go Away, Babe," and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.